works for profit activities, commercial activities. In general communist economics, the state doesn't work for profit. But when the state organizes for profit activity, then that's a state capitalist organization or an activity. And then, of course, there are so many other types of capitalism which are being discussed these days. There's crony capitalism. Crony capitalism implies that there is a nexus between the business community, the politicians, and the bureaucrats. And then there's favoritism and nepotism in terms of, say, tax breaks or in terms of opportunities for awarding contracts and many other things. So there's all types of shades and grades that we can find in between. As far as these individual systems are concerned, they all have their pluses and minuses, like everything else in this world. Hardly anything in life that we see around us in the real world is perfect. Everything has its inherent structural deficiencies and flaws. As far as communism is concerned, we have seen from the experience of the Soviet Union that it didn't quite work. It didn't sustain for more than a certain period. Also, one important reason for that is that communism essentially stifles individual expression and individual freedom to such a large degree that the individuality is subsumed very largely by the interests of the state. So the collective subsumes the individual to a very, very great degree. So such stifling may not be the healthiest thing to do. So therefore it leads to a lot of disgruntlement, it leads to unrest, and especially as people become aware that they have rights too, and even though they recognize the benefits that a communist system offers them, but there are other issues that trouble them. And eventually, egalitarianism cannot work because nature does not accommodate egalitarianism. Nature is very unequal. This is the harsh fact of life. And this inequality in nature is something that is fundamental to nature. We have people born, for example, mentally challenged. Someone is born with a very high IQ. Someone is born very beautiful, someone is born very ugly. Someone is born in a rich family, someone in a poor family. Someone is born with certain skills, somebody else born with some other type of skills. Nature is anything but equal. Nature is anything but egalitarian. That doesn't mean that I'm advocating the perpetuation of inequality, but I'm merely stating a statement of fact that this is how nature is. So when we try to artificially bring in egalitarianism into society, nature responds. And therefore the system eventually collapses. When I was in school, we read this novel by George Orwell called The Animal Farm, which speaks about the fallacies and the deficiencies of the communist system. It was a satirical novel about the communist setup soon after it began with Trotsky and Stalin and so on and so forth. And ultimately what does happen is that those who come to power in a communist situation become dictators of sorts, because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, unless one is very spiritually evolved. So power is something that goes to the head. The wife of Mao Zedong, if I remember right, I can't quote an exact reference, I remember reading it many years ago. She once famously declared that people today run after sex because they do not know the intoxication of power. What power can do. In front of getting power, these other pleasures are absolutely insignificant. So when power comes into somebody's hand, unless one is very strongly grounded, well-rooted, and preferably very, very spiritual, it is hard to cope with power. And this novel was entirely about that, about how power corrupted, and then you had this clique, you had this elite class of people So it wasn't any more an egalitarian society. So anyway, the system crumbled. And even in a country like China, where they profess a political communist ideology, they've accepted an economic capitalist ideology. Even though it's state capitalism, they've tried some kind of a hybrid between communism and capitalism, because they have seen that economically, that kind of ideology they were following earlier wasn't paying dividends. As far as the socialist ideology is concerned, noble as it may be, like some of the objects of communism, and we must be fair and take all these principles on merit. There are some merits in the communist ideology. There are some merits in the socialist ideology. And they're noble, some of them. The sustainability is another question. Now, as far as the socialist ideology is concerned, unfortunately, experience shows that it is not sustainable. Because economically, to maintain and sustain healthcare benefits, free education, and pensions for a growing population with inflation and so on and so forth is extremely hard. And many countries in the West today that do this are really struggling with this. And therefore, for example, in some countries, they are delaying the retirement age more and more so that the pension can start later and later because they don't have the funds to start paying the pensions. And I was mentioning briefly a while ago to somebody that in some countries, those who are in the medical profession are being officially asked by their governments to study alternative medical therapies because the modern system of medicine is just not sustainable because it is too expensive. A modern medical setup is highly technologically intensive. And therefore, because it is technologically incentive, it's dependent on equipment, therefore it is highly capital intensive. You've got to keep generating more and more capital to buy equipment to be updated with the latest technology. And at the speed with which technology is progressing these days, by the time you've spent a fortune to acquire some equipment or a technology, it's got outdated. And then you need more money to get latest technology, and it goes on. It's not sustainable. So therefore, governments are now asking their medical practitioners to do some natural therapies, which don't cost money, really. And they're very simple. So this is how we see the socialist systems, therefore, are not sustainable. And when it comes to capitalist systems, if we go for the far-right capitalist systems where individualism is given a great deal of importance, the problem lies there. Where the communist systems give excessive importance to the state at the cost of the individual, the capitalistic systems, especially the far-right systems, give excessive importance to the individuals at the cost of the larger community. And this also is a contradiction. And this also has a risk, because when you give too much freedom to the individual, unbridled freedom to the individual, we basically let loose, potentially, so many negative forces that are driven by baser instincts of humans. And then this becomes like a tsunami that pushes on that economic system. And then the whole society gets pulled in a certain direction, and that direction is usually very, very materialistic, very materialistic. You have consumerism, you have a high waste economy that's generated, and you'll see that all countries that espouse capitalism are high waste economies. And in fact, economic progress is understood and defined many times in terms of waste. I believe in America, please correct me if I'm wrong, that there is also something called a garbage disposal index as a measure of the status of the economy, because everything is based upon levels of consumption. So we measure progress in terms of degree of consumption. The more you consume, the more wealthy you are. But that's a paradigm that perhaps is not sustainable. It will not go on. And therefore we have, for example, the Wall Street problem, where greed is good is the slogan, or greed is God becomes the slogan. Some people had that slogan. I remember reading some articles on this. So materialistic capitalism, where there is excessive focus on the individual and the liberal idea of giving too much freedom to the individual, is also a threat not only for the individual but also for the collective good of society in general. Because the human nature is something that everyone has to come to terms with. Why is it that these systems all fail? Why is it that there are deep structural deficiencies in each of these systems? The answer is very simple. The answer is human nature. Human nature, especially when it is not spiritualized, sees a predominance of the lower, baser nature of the human being. Greed, lust, anger, pride, ego, jealousy. These are the ones that drive people to do things when they are not sufficiently spiritually evolved. And unless one can come to terms with that and alter that, any economic system that we choose will not yield the right result. Ultimately, the human nature will force every system to be a system of exploitation. So even in capitalistic societies, we have an issue where the rich seem to be getting richer and the poor classes are maybe a little better off. They come to the middle class level, but the gap between the two widens further and further. That is also something that is witnessed everywhere all over the world. I remember a quote. I don't quite remember who has said it, but it's something that I like quoting very often because it's just so witty and so apt. And the quote goes as follows. Communism is the reverse of capitalism. In capitalism, man exploits man, and in communism, it's the reverse. In other words, whatever be our ism, there will be exploitation. There will be injustice. There will be inequality. There will be unrest. Why so? Because we have not dealt with human nature. It is not that modern economies and governments don't understand that human nature is a problem. They recognize it, acknowledge it, and set in place many strong deterrents to deter any sort of adventurism, illegal adventurism on the part of business classes or any other kind of people. But what they attempt to do is that they try to regulate human nature externally through a regulatory framework, through laws, through stringent punishment in jail or fines and so on and so forth. Inasmuch as these things are also essential, necessary for human society, they are not sufficient. And this is where I come to the spirituality part of it. When we talk of materialistic capitalism, we are speaking about a system where the human nature has no inherent controls. When we talk of spiritual capitalism, we are speaking about an approach or a paradigm where we look inward, and while we put in place whatever external regulatory mechanisms that are necessary to check human nature, we primarily work on the internal. Even that is an ideal situation, undoubtedly. And that will also have its flaws in terms of how far we have succeeded in getting everybody to become spiritual. But nevertheless, at least the paradigm is sustainable. In other places, the paradigm is not sustainable. So we work inwards towards changing the basic human nature by spiritualizing it. What is spirituality then? Spirituality, in very simple terms, is a process of rediscovering our original nature, of rediscovering our spiritual existence and identity, and working towards that, working towards perfection on this path. Now, the words spirituality and religion are interconnected, and because of different issues with religion in history, and especially in modern times, people have become increasingly alienated from religion, or they have bad ideas about religion, and they feel it's better we don't do, better we do without religion, because religion is the cause of so many problems. But that, unfortunately, will be like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That will unfortunately be like plucking the eye out when there is a cataract instead of surgically removing the cataract. Spirituality and religion, what is the connection between the two? Spirituality is the essence of religion. If somebody practices religion, whatever that religious faith may be, we are speaking in generic terms. When somebody practices religion, if he or she does not understand the essence of that religion, doesn't understand the lofty spiritual ideals and principles enshrined in that religion, then that will only be an external, superficial following of that religion. And it is this kind of religion that leads to different problems that we have seen in the world, historically and even currently. It is not religion per se that is at fault. It is the improper understanding of religion. So those who understand the spiritual essence of religions may use the external features of religion, may use the ritualistic aspect of religion to nourish, nurture, and facilitate their inner spiritual growth. So spiritualism and religion are not contradictory words, are not mutually exclusive. There is increasingly this opinion nowadays, especially in the Western world when I travel, people come to me and say, I am spiritual, but I'm not religious. So this is becoming an increasingly common idea that people are espousing these days. But the fact is that the two are very intimately connected. So when we speak of spirituality, we are essentially speaking of rectifying the inner self, the inner world, controlling the inner world, controlling the mind, controlling the senses, living for a higher purpose, a spiritual purpose, understanding what that purpose is, reconnecting to our original spiritual source. Every religion will have its own conception of what that identity is, and we will not get into that today. But the process of reconnecting to our original spiritual self and connecting that spiritual self to the origin, that is spirituality in very broad terms. So by the practice of spirituality, we hope to heal the self, the materialistic self, so that the real spiritual self may arise. And as it arises, then the baser qualities start diminishing. The real spiritual nature awakens, and the divine qualities like satisfaction, compassion, kindness, love, mercy, forgiveness, brotherhood and sisterhood, tolerance, mutual understanding, cooperation, humility, generosity, charity, all these will begin to flourish. So when we want to rectify the ills of the modern economic system, and especially of the modern capitalistic system, we have to go to the root by rectifying the basic instincts of human society. So how does it apply then to our two key words, ownership and motive? Let's speak about ownership first. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the different economic models that we have today espouse different entities who will own the means of production, ranging from the capitalist model to the communist model. The spiritual capitalist model proposes the following. It proposes that ownership can rest with the individual, as in the capitalist model, but only superficially. In the sense that, from a legal point of view, the right should be with the individual entity, and every individual entity will have certain rights safeguarded by the state for enjoying that property in a certain way. But why do I say that the ownership in spiritual capitalism is only superficial? Because in a very substantial and deep way, fundamentally, a spiritual capitalist will understand that I am not the real owner. Even though for practical purposes, we do need to have these legal safeguards in place. But fundamentally, internally, the owner of the property should understand that I am not the real owner, that I am a trustee at best. So the principle of spiritual capitalism is a principle of trusteeship, where we think of properties that are in our name or in our control as properties bequeathed to us in trust for them to be used properly for some higher purpose. A trust is something we are all familiar with as a legal entity. A trust has certain objectives, and there are certain beneficiaries who are meant to benefit from the activities of the trust. And then there are trustees who are given the responsibility to organize the functioning of that trust so that the objectives may be met and the beneficiaries are actually benefited. So then when we look upon ownership in the light of trusteeship, and understanding that I'm not really the owner, that is where spiritual capitalism begins. I grew up in India, and in our childhood we would hear many stories about different kings and so on. And one such story was about an apocryphal story, I believe. I don't know if it was actually historically true, but these are stories we heard in childhood. There was a king called Akbar, and he was a very liberal king for his times. And he had a very wise minister whose name was Birbal. And there are legendary stories about how Birbal would teach good lessons to Akbar. So one time Birbal saw that probably the emperor was getting a little proud. So Birbal wanted to teach him a lesson. There was nobody else but Birbal who could teach him a lesson. So then one day, when the emperor was going for a walk in his palace gardens, he suddenly saw a man lying across the garden path and who was wearing the robes of a holy person. And he was just irreverentially in the path of the king, sprawled across the pavement. And as the king approached, he was infuriated to see somebody lying across there in such an arrogant manner. And he rudely asked him to get up and move away. And the person looked up very lazily and said, "Well, who are you? And why do you ask me to get up?" He said, "Don't you know who I am?" He said, "Well, who are you? Do you own this place?" He said, "Yes, of course, I'm the emperor of this land and I own this place." So then the man lying down asked him then, "Before you were born, who owned this place?" He said, "Well, my father owned this place." "And before him, who owned the place?" "Well, his father owned the place." "And then after you, who will own this place?" "My son will own this place." "And after him, who will own this place?" "His son will own the place." So the man lying on the street, on the road, burst out into loud laughter. And the emperor was now really enraged. He said, "How dare this man, first of all, come in here and lie like this in the garden path, in my private gardens. Who is he anyway? And how can he speak like this so irreverentially?" "And then why do you laugh?" he asked him. He kept his anger in check and asked him, "So why are you laughing so loudly?" He said, "So your highness, actually, this is not your property. Actually, you're living in a hotel. Living in a hotel? Of course, the word used there was something different. There were no hotels in those days, but I'm using modern terminology. You're living in a hotel. He said, how come? In a hotel, you go into a room, you check in, you pay, and you use the room for as long as you've paid. It's not your room, and still it's your room. So long as you're in the room, no one can disturb you. But you don't own the room. You have rights to the room, which are protected. And then you leave, and someone else comes into that very room and owns that room for a while, and then goes away, and someone else comes, and all the while the real proprietor is somebody else. So similarly, this world is like a hotel. So a spiritualist thinks a little deeply and understands that why should I become so possessive about everything I own when basically, fundamentally, I don't own it. I am just someone who's checking into this hotel. This is my property only conditionally, not in an absolute sense. And this idea is repeated many times in the Vedic scriptures. The Isha Upanishad, for example, speaks, and permit me to just quote one Sanskrit verse, Isha Vasyamidam Sarvam Yatkincham Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Punjita Magridaha Kasya Svittaram. This verse explains that everything in this creation, in this world, is the property of one who has created this. And it doesn't belong to the individuals who inhabit this world. And one can utilize what is available in this world as one's quota, recognizing this to be one's quota, and leave aside other things that are not in one's quota. Now, what one's quota is and what one's isn't, that is another matter. It is a connected matter, but something we'll come to a little shortly. But importantly, the point here is that we're speaking of ownership of property as being fundamentally not with the individual entity, not even with the state. The communist ideology says that ownership vests with the state, and spiritual ideology says that ownership also rests not with the individual, but with God, and whatever be the conception of God that may be there in different ideas. Let me give you a simple example, another analogy of an office situation in a company. We have an officer who works in that company, and the company gives him certain facilities. He has a cabin, and he has many other perks that he gets, and he uses them for the company's purpose. The company has officially handed them over to him for using for the company's benefit. The property belongs to the company, but the person utilizes it. He has rights over his cabin. Now, because the cabin doesn't belong to that officer, it doesn't give any other employee of the company a right to come into that cabin and say, it's not your property, it's the company's property, therefore I can sit here in this cabin. That will not be permitted, because that is his quota. That is what the company has given him. Your quota is, you have this office space, you have this salary, you have these perquisites. These are the facilities that will be given to you. So that person has a right to enjoy his quota. So by providence, whatever has come as our lot in life is our quota. Whatever we may earn by honest endeavor is our quota. However, when we go beyond ethical means of acquiring and enjoying property, then we are straying into somebody else's cabin and infringing on that person's quota. So spirituality, therefore, gives us that template on which we can pursue or understand the idea of ownership properly. Coming then to the idea of motive. Profit motive, that is the underlying principle in capitalism, is understandable, because without profit you cannot sustain anything. At the same time, an unbridled profit motive goes haywire, goes out of control. And then we have a situation like, as I mentioned, we saw in Wall Street and so on and so forth. So the problem is not with desire to create wealth or to earn wealth. Creation of wealth is not a problem. Creation of wealth is a necessity. However, the purpose of creating wealth and the manner in which that wealth is to be enjoyed and for what purpose, these are important considerations. Today we have a greed-based capitalist economy. And I was yesterday at a program and I was discussing with Sanjeev here and others too. And I was mentioning that modern-day capitalist civilization merely fans the flames of desire within the heart of the individuals. That's all it does. When you fan a flame, it eventually becomes a blazing fire. And that is why today we have rampant consumerism and we have unending desires going on and on and on. I read somewhere the other day that if we were to try to have first world, quote unquote, first world standards of living across the world for all societies in all countries, you would need 6 Earth planets. Something to think about, isn't it? So therefore, the statement of the 13-year-old young man is valid. It's just not sustainable. Ultimately, prosperity, human prosperity, depends on the gifts of nature. Even when there are service industries, eventually, directly, indirectly, one depends on the resources given by nature. When there is greed and an exploitative spirit that becomes very predominant in the hearts of people, then we exploit not just each other, but we also exploit the resources of nature, and that is what we see today, and that is principally the reason behind the environmental crisis. We have the exploitative spirit and greed gone awry. So even though we may have so many climate change discussions and we may try to have various regulations in place, fundamentally again, the problem is inside, the environment in the heart. That is the issue. So greed that is unbridled, that is let loose, and sought to be controlled only by external regulatory frameworks cannot sustain unless there is an internal change. So rather than focusing on greed-based economies, if we focus on need-based economies, that will mark a fundamental change, a paradigm shift. That is a necessity if capitalism has to be sustainable. Capitalism that is greed-based is not sustainable.